Several times I've flown in the first. I have no desire whatsoever to fly in the second. And more than anything else about which I can think, someday I hope to fly away to the third. That's heavens that we're talking about. In 2 Corinthians 12, verses 1 through 4, in perhaps the only reference to the third heaven, in those words at least, Paul says this: "It is not expedient for me, doubtless, to glory. I will come in visions and revelations of the Lord. I knew a man in Christ about 14 years ago, whether in the body I cannot tell, or whether out of the body I cannot tell, God knoweth. Such an one caught up to the third heaven. And I knew such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I cannot tell, God knoweth, how that he was caught up into paradise and heard unspeakable words which it is not lawful for a man to utter." Now Paul makes the statement there that he was caught up into the third heaven. If there is a third, there must of necessity be a first and a second. It's rather easy to determine from this context that Paul has reference to the dwelling place of God when he refers to the third heaven. He uses the word paradise to describe it, although the word paradise here may not be used in exactly the same way that it was used by Jesus on the cross. At least it is describing the dwelling place of God, that place where all of us want to go. We sang about that in the first two songs today. How beautiful heaven must be. We read of a place that's called heaven, and we want to go there. That's the third heaven. The Bible seems to use the word heaven in the first sense to describe what we might call the atmosphere around the earth. At least it is that area where the birds fly. God created the heaven and the earth in the beginning. Heaven may be used somewhat in that sense there. In Genesis 2, verse 1 and verse 19, the Bible talks about the birds of the air, or the birds of the heavens. And in that sense is referring to that area where the birds fly and where you and I would fly if we were to take a trip in an airplane. The second use of the word heaven is in passages like Isaiah 13 and Matthew 24, verse 29 in this latter case, where reference is made to the stars of the heavens, talking about that space that is on out there much further than the atmosphere of the earth, out into the area where all the stars are and the moon and the sun and all that is space beyond us and yet has a physical connection to the earth itself. Seems that the word heaven is used to describe that, and this would be what we might refer to as the second heaven. And then in several passages, as we believe is the case here in 2 Corinthians 12, the word heaven is used to refer to the dwelling place of God. For example, in Luke 15, it talks about joy being made in heaven over one soul that repents. That's God's dwelling place. And that's where you and I want to go. And so, based on these thoughts that are expressed in these verses, I say again, several times I've been in the first. I have no desire to go to the second, although I've seen some people I'd like to send. But more than anything else, I want to go to the third, to that heaven eternally. I never will forget the first time that I flew in an airplane, went into the heaven, the first heaven in that sense. I was a student here at Freed Hardeman. It was in the early part of 1960, the month of January, if I remember. I'd never flown before. In fact, I'd never ridden in an automobile much. My dad had a livestock truck on the farm, and my main transportation up until I came to school was a mule and a truck. And I hadn't ridden in a car much less an airplane. I was selected as the state president and the national vice president of the student NEA and had to travel several places over the country to go to conventions. I went to Jackson, Tennessee, up at the little airport here at Jackson, and boarded my first plane. It was a two-engine job. I never will forget the feeling as we began to leave the ground. I'd never had that feeling before. Went into Memphis. We were going to board a big plane then. That was the four-engine job, propeller job. We got on that plane to go out of Memphis, went out on the runway, and started down it faster than I'd ever traveled before, except in that plane a few minutes before. All of a sudden, the pilot brought her down to a halt, and we went back into the terminal. We waited about an hour and a half and boarded that same plane, got on it again, and started down the runway again. The same thing happened. Something was not working just right, so we went back to the terminal, and that word terminal was beginning to catch my attention. Finally, another plane came in the same size, and after about an hour, they loaded us on it, and the people off of that went on to the one that we'd failed on twice, and they went out in front of us. We went into Oklahoma City. A few days later, flew back into Memphis. Late at night, got on a little two-engine job again to come back to Jackson. We got about halfway between Memphis and Jackson. The pilot said, "Our right engine has gone out." We turned around and went back to Memphis. On one trip, my first airplane trip, I left the airport in Memphis five times. I never will forget when we took that first flight across the ocean. We're on that plane for some 8 hours before we landed in Vienna, Austria. Back at the latter part of last year when we went to Brazil, and we're on that plane for 7.5 hours, I believe, before we landed. That's a different type of trip from anything that I had taken as a boy. And yet I've learned to love flying and traveling by airplane. Believe that it is one of the safest ways for us to go. I enjoy that type of trip, and when there is a need for it, I plan to use it again. But I have no desire whatsoever to get on one of these spaceships and go out into that second heaven. I remember in February of 1962, just after our second child had been born, and we were still in the hospital at Cookeville, Tennessee, that we watched on a television there in the hospital room as the first astronaut went up into space and then came back down and landed. I remember watching just a while later when there was that first trip around the Earth in that first orbit, rather short trip. I remember sitting up, I believe we were living in Memphis at the time, and listening to the wee hours in the morning to that first statement that was made about that giant step for mankind on the moon. And yet, I'm still convinced that I don't want to go on one of those trips. I've been in the first, I have no desire to go to the second, and I look forward to going to the third heaven. But here is something that I want you to notice with me today. There are some likenesses when you start comparing all three of these trips. There are some principles involved, whether it's a trip into the first heaven, the second heaven, or the third, that are all alike. And we can understand them when we're dealing with a trip into the first or the second, and yet sometimes seem to have difficulty understanding when we're talking about that trip to the third heaven. For example, it is so important that a person have a desire to take a trip if that trip is going to be successful. Now, I suppose that you might force somebody to get onto a plane or force somebody, and that's really the stretch of the imagination, to get into one of these spaceships, but not to have a successful trip. There needs to be that desire. A desire to take a trip for some purpose, to accomplish some end. It's when that desire is there that the trip is most successful. That's true as far as the first heaven is concerned, the second one, and it's true as far as the third is concerned. You know, God will not force anybody to go to heaven. He wants everybody to, not willing that any should perish, 2 Peter 3:9. But he stands at the door of man's heart and knocks. He will not open that door from the outside. He will not force himself in. He will not force you to go to heaven. He'll let you go somewhere else if that's what you really want. Paul said in Philippians 1 that he had a desire to depart and live with God. You see the idea of the leaving on a trip? Now this is in Philippians 1:24, where he's talking about that contrast between the need of his staying here on earth and the desire to go to be with God. He said, I have a desire to depart. In 2 Corinthians 5, verses 1 and 2, after describing the fact that this earthly tabernacle is going to be dissolved, he said that we earnestly desire to be clothed with that house that is from above. Same idea. We desire to take that trip to go to be with God. It's a rather sober thought to think about leaving in that sense. I suppose there is a sense in which we would feel like Paul, that maybe all of us this morning would really like to stay around a little longer and be involved in life, especially because of the ties that we have. And yet, that overriding desire that all of us ought to have is that desire to go to heaven more than anything else. Sometimes we'll save up for years and years to be able to get on a plane and take a trip of a vacation or something to some other part of this nation or some other part of the world. And those astronauts that have flown in our spaceships and ships of other countries that have gone out into outer space have prepared themselves with a desire and a period of preparation to be ready for a long period of time. If that's the case in both of those, should it not be more so the case when we're talking about the third heaven? Of wanting to go, looking forward to that day that we can leave this earth and fly away to that eternal home in heaven. There is a likeness in that there needs to be this desire. But in the second place, there is a likeness also in the fact that if you're going to take a trip, you've got to be in the proper vehicle. You go down to the airport, and there are a lot of planes sitting out there, and they look alike, but there's only one of them that's headed to the destination where you want to go at that specific time. You might say, well, I believe one of these planes is just as good as another. Or you might even say, I don't think I have to get in the plane in order to fly. I think I'll just go my own way. Oh, no. All of us know that there is a designated plane at a designated gate and that we must enter into that plane and be on it when it leaves if we're going to reach the destination according to the schedule. I just cannot imagine anybody going down to Cape Kennedy, one of those astronauts, and going and saying, well, right over here is another spaceship. I believe I'll just go over here and get in it this time. No, they know the one that's on the launch pad. They know the one that's going to leave. They know which vehicle it is. They know which vehicle they must enter, and they know that they must enter it in order to take that trip to the second heaven. Jesus Christ came to this earth and spent more than our governments ever spent on all the space program to purchase the vehicle in which you and I can travel to the third heaven, and has said that that's the only vehicle that's going. You take the Bible sometime and think about it. Can you find any other vehicle that is going from this earth to heaven from our dispensation other than the church? Now, those who lived and died under another dispensation is a different thing. But as far as I'm able to determine, there's not another vehicle that's going to travel to heaven and take people to heaven except the church of our Lord, the church of which Jesus Christ is the head, the church that he purchased with his only blood. Now, if we can understand to go into the first heaven, we must be in the right vehicle and do whatever's necessary to make preparation to get into it. And if we're going into the second heaven, we must be in the proper vehicle and do whatever preparation is necessary to get into it. Why can we not understand, if we're going to take a trip to the third heaven, that we must be in the right vehicle and do whatever preparation is necessary in order to get into that vehicle? I think we can understand that. And it makes just as much sense in connection with the third heaven as it does the first and the second. We must be in the proper vehicle to make the trip to the right destination. And that vehicle is Jesus Christ and his church. He is the one who will present us to the Father, Ephesians 5 and other passages. But in the third place, there is a likeness in that there is a set of laws, a specific set of laws that will govern the travel to each of these three heavens. When you get into a plane and go up into the first heaven, there are some things that have to be taken into consideration that you never had to take into consideration before when you were on the ground. You don't have to worry about the lift and the torque of a mule. But when you get in an airplane, you'd better take some of those things into consideration, because you see, once you go up into the air, there's a different set of rules that govern than what are down here on the ground. And you have to go by those rules if you're going to be successful. Each one of us knows that. And when the space travel is involved and you get in one of those vehicles that goes out into space and once leave the Earth atmosphere and the pull of gravity, you're under an entirely different set of laws. You've probably watched on television as some of these astronauts in the vehicle will just float from side to side. They're not under the same set of laws we're under here on the ground. You see, they're in a different place, a different set of circumstances. And when you and I are in the church, which is the vehicle in which we travel to the third heaven, we are under a different set of laws that are to govern us than if we're trying to live in this world. By that I mean that when we become Christians, we are to live by God's laws for Christians. I'm not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination here that God's laws do not apply to non-Christians. That's not the point I'm talking about. But I'm talking about that we are to apply those principles for living a new life. A Christian just doesn't do some things that a person in the world does. He has a new set of laws to govern him because he's a part of God's kingdom. He's a part of the church. And now he has a goal that's out there to press toward it. And he has what's called a straight and narrow way. It's not that broad and wide way. It's more restricted. Those laws apply in that sense. Now, folks, if we can understand that in the first and second heaven, can we not understand it in the third? A person that's out here living in the world may not respect the laws of God, but the person who's living in the church must respect those laws and be governed by them in order to have a successful trip. And you and I both know that if the pilot of that airplane does not respect the laws that govern flying in the air, and the leader of that group of astronauts does not respect the laws that have to do with flying in outer space, that there's going to be a crash. There's going to be trouble. Can we not understand that if we do not respect the laws of God relative to flying, traveling in His church as Christians, that there will be a crash? For that reason, we are in need of missions control or some type of center or some type of help to guide us in making the trip. Oh, I'd hate to go down to the airport in Memphis and have one of those big planes turned over to me and tell me just to fly it any way I wanted to. I think I know about how far I'd get. But the one who is trained as a pilot knows how to read those instruments and knows how to listen to the instructions that are given at the tower, can get that plane in the air, and then as he comes to land it, he can land it in the proper way because he's being guided. And sometimes it's that message from the tower that keeps that plane from crashing. Sometimes it's the suggestion for correction, and I guess suggestion is a weak word there, the command for correction that's given from Houston or some other place dealing with the controls for one of these spaceships that gets it back on course and lets it land in the proper place. I believe that's where the elders of the church come in and watching for our souls in Hebrews 13:17. And where, in a sense, all of us help one another by mutually encouraging each other to stay on the right course and help each other by pointing out problems that exist. I just cannot imagine this scenario that a plane is going in to land and he's 200 yards short of the runway. And the fellow up in the tower sees that and he says, you know, I'm afraid I'll make him mad if I tell him he's wrong. Or each one of us ought to work out his own way. He's down there. He's with it. Let him do it. I don't owe him anything. Oh, no. That fellow in the tower is going to frantically try to get the message to that man to correct it before he crashes. Now, if we do that in the first and second heaven, in travel where we're dealing with the body, you see, if that plane crashes, the soul's not damaged. And even in these cases where one of the space vehicles has crashed, that did not kill the soul. The soul went on to the keeping of God. We're dealing with physical things in these first two heavens, And we are so alert and so interested and so willing to help and so willing to be helped if it will keep us from crashing. Why then do we not use that same principle when we're talking about a trip to the third heaven? We may need somebody to point out some changes and to help us to stay on that right course in order to make the trip. And then when we find that there are some problems, we need to be willing to make those corrections. You're off course. What does the pilot do? Immediately he tries to get it back on course. There needs to be an adjustment made in that space flight. What does he do? Immediately, with all the help and technology that's been discovered and is available, he tries to get that thing back on course. And when you and I have pointed out to us by the existing laws that govern the trip to the third heaven, by those who are in the watchtowers to help us, and maybe even sitting side by side to help us to make the right decisions, point out things that need to be changed to get us back on course according to the laws that are in existence, we need to be so thankful for that and make those changes. Again, I say, I've been in the first. I have no desire to go to the second, but more than anything else I've ever thought about, I want to fly away to that heaven, the third. And in order to do that, I've got to have a desire to go. Be in the right vehicle, respect the governing laws, listen to the ones who will help me get on course and stay on course, and make whatever corrections need to be made to be on that course in order to land at that judgment day ready to enjoy the beautiful place called heaven. Two things stand out in this about which we need to think today. To those of you who are not Christians, remember, you cannot take the trip unless you're in the vehicle. You need to obey the gospel and be baptized into Christ and into His body today. And to those who are off course, unless you get back on course, there's going to be a crash. You need to repent and pray to God for forgiveness. If you need to get in the vehicle or to get back on course, come as together we stand and sing.